what is a fascism?
Nobody knows. The end.
Philosophers.
Philosophers. You sounded much more casual than usual.
I did. It's been a good week. I'm pretty casual today. It's casual. I've accepted my programming. Anyway. What are we talking about today? On a casual day.
On a casual... Let's casually discuss... fascism.
Let's discuss fascism. Fascism. Oh, the fash.
The fash. What? Not to be confused with fashion. Although, fascism is quite fashionable.
Indeed. It's almost like it's part of it.
Yes, that is kind of the whole thing.
Of course, that's kind of interesting to define a political philosophy by their dress. Moving on. So, what is a fascism?
What is a fascism? Well, nobody knows. The end. That's the actual answer.
Well, it depends on the political alignment of the person you're asking.
Right.
That's kind of true, though.
Yes.
It's kind of like capitalism and communism. One is the evil spawn of Satan, and then one is God's gift to humanity. Well, they're both. But it depends on who you ask.
Depends on who you ask, yes.
Although I would say that the average person probably... I think it's safe to say that in current year of our Lord, 2022, most people, and for a while now, would agree that fascism bad. It's not good.
Right, yes. No one anymore thinks that fascism is a good thing.
Yeah.
And the last time that happened was when the 30s. Maybe a little earlier than that.
Well, the last time anyone thought it was good, there were some people that still thought it was a good idea.
Well true.
There depends are on where still... you were.
True. So the last time it was mainstream in the West to think that fascism was cool.
Again, where in the West?
Right.
Because some people would say it was never a good idea. And if you go back and check the historical record, there were those who were like, hey, this is probably not a good idea. Because it's a form of socialism. But anyway.
True.
Although, it doesn't mean the same thing. I hear you out there. There may be one just self-hating socialist that listens to the show.
Right.
Who we're trying to convert.
It's not socialism. It's national socialism. Cool. What's the difference? Who knows?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like how, you know, the People's Democratic Republic of North Korea is none of those things except in North Korea.
I'll have you know it's the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea. See... Actually, I just figured it out. I finally have solved the puzzle right here. You heard it here first. It's the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. The people are democratic, not the country.
Not the country, exactly.
Yeah. They all wish they had democracy, but they don't. But
they don't.
That's just how it is.
What are you talking about? Everyone over there loves it. I've seen the approval ratings. The data doesn't lie.
Right.
And you know what? That's actually... Okay, quick side tangent. It's true, though. Every survey taken in North Korea regarding North Koreans would have you believe that it is the best place on Earth. And
yeah.
That is a factual statement that all of the studies coming out of North Korea say that it is the best place to live. Just like if you were to ask any burger chain why their burger is the world's best burger, according to them.
Them, yeah.
Yeah. So just because you have a study doesn't mean that it's accurate or real or true.
Right.
But enough about that. So what
is a fascism?
What is a fascism,
though? Well, I decided to pull up a couple of different sources because the first place that I went was Wikipedia, and I realized that was a bad idea.
Because it's ran by fascists.
It's written by people who like to call things fascist.
Fair enough.
That's the
Ooh, that'll be our next question. Why does everything get called fascist?
Because fash bad.
Fash bad.
And you bad, so you're a fascist. That'll make people not like you, just like how I don't like you.
But still, I'm confused. What is a fascism?
Okay, well, we will start with Wikipedia, I suppose, and then consult my alternate source. According to Wikipedia, fascism is a far-right, authoritarian, ultra-nationalist political ideology and movement characterized by a dictatorial leader, centralized autocracy, militarism, forcible suppression of opposition, belief in a natural social hierarchy, subordination of individual interests for the perceived good of the nation and race, and strong regimentation of society and the economy. What do we think about this one first?
Well, the thing that's most interesting is that there's three things that they use to kind of say what it is, but also none of them are characteristics of the thing.
Right.
So what was the first three things?
Far right, authoritarian, ultra-nationalist.
Okay. Far right is relative, like literally.
Right. As soon as you put the word far in it, it's like...
Well, as soon as you use the word right or left.
Sure.
Compared to what? Like, I get it, but I think we've all kind of established that where the middle is depends on how far the spectrum goes in either direction. I think most people would understand kind of what they mean. I think what they mean to say is it's very conservative. Mm-hmm. Although, we'll get to that.
Right, yeah, we'll get there.
Ultra-nationalist. Not very nationalist. Not hyper-nationalist. Specifically ultra-nationalist.
Yes.
Cool. So that's one of those words that means literally nothing.
Well, they have a definition for that. We can do that if we want.
Let's go to the definition of ultra-nationalist real quick. Okay. But I swear, if it's the only time I hear the word ultra that I'm okay with it is when I'm talking about frequency bands and radio.
Yeah.
Because there's actually
maybe some other niche, yeah, scientific / engineering things where you know, just called something ultra.
Right. Well, but we all sat down.
Ultra means like more than, so like ultrasound. Mm. Like it's sound of a higher frequency than you can hear.
Yeah, but okay. What's the difference between ultrasonic and hypersonic?
Hypersonic is something that moves faster than sound, I think.
Hmm. Okay.
I think that's the difference. Anyway.
Yeah.
Ultra-nationalism or extreme nationalism.
God. I almost swore.
is an extreme form of nationalism. In which a country asserts or maintains detrimental hegemony, supremacy, or other forms of control over other nations to pursue its specific interests.
But it has to be detrimental, right?
It must be detrimental, yes.
Over other nations?
Yes.
So wait a minute. Like colonialism?
Yeah, I guess so.
Don't we? But. Okay.
Or just taking, it doesn't necessarily have to be colonialism, just like taking advantage of other nations, I guess.
Oh, I read it exploiting as like them. Occupation. Like you occupy other nations.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's unwind. Like, so the difference between nationalism and ultra-nationalism, you can be a nationalist within your borders. But what makes it ultra-nationalist is when the influence, you're influentially nationalist. You're a popular nationalist, or you're just a very effective nationalist.
Right.
That's kind of interesting to think about. Things are only bad when they're actually, you know, effective in some cases.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so fair enough, I guess. What's the next thing?
After what?
We had ultra-nationalist. What was the last one?
Far-right, authoritarian.
Authoritarian, that's the one we skipped. Authoritarian is pretty straightforward. That's, I think, one that I can agree with. Although, yes. Hear me out. Congratulations. You've literally cut the entire political spectrum, arguably, in half.
Right.
So anywhere north on the political compass.
Cool.
Neat. Still differentiating, though.
So it is differentiating, but also it puts it in the category of basically every government that ever existed.
True. Also kind of relative. But still, I get what they're going for. Yeah. So the first two, far right,
authoritarian.
So top right of the political compass.
Mm-hmm.
And then a qualifier within that top right.
Yes.
Being nationalistic.
Right. Extremely nationalistic, apparently.
As opposed to what, though? Could you be...
I'm mildly nationalist.
Not even that, though. What I'm saying is, can you be far-right authoritarian globalist? Is that a thing?
That is an interesting concept.
Like, I'm just saying, like, because if we're using these definitions, it has to differentiate from other things, right? Like, how can you be that combination of things, though? Like, that just doesn't seem to ring true.
You want the world fascist government.
Yeah, but... It's communism? not the same?
No.
But you see what I'm saying? Like, what does that look like? Like, if I were to walk into a debate space and be like, hi, oh, I am not a fascist because I'm not nationalist. I am a globalist authoritarian... What's the other one?
On the far right.
Yeah, I'm a far right global authoritarian. Oh, that's just like neoliberal. I don't know, but that's the point I'm trying to say. Like, what does it even look like?
It's, yeah. Well, the whole, we should maybe just do an episode sometime on the political compass and why it doesn't actually make sense.
What does happen? Or how the political compass was literally just constructed to kind of make it easier to know who the enemy is.
Right.
Hi. Let us compare this chart to see whether
most other political categories. Yeah.
Rip.
Okay, let's contrast this with another definition.
Okay.
This one comes from the American Heritage Dictionary. Often fascism with a capital F. A system of government marked by centralization of authority under a dictator, a capitalist economy subject to stringent governmental controls, squinty eyes, violent suppression of the opposition, and typically a policy of belligerent nationalism and racism.
I tend to actually like that definition better, though. Because what are our examples? There are two real good examples. There's three okay examples, I think. Nazi Germany is one.
That's the one. Everyone thinks of that one first, yeah.
Even though it wasn't the first one.
Right.
Benito Mussolini pioneered fascism in Italy.
Right.
And that's why it's called that. The fascis, if you go back to Roman history,
yes,
is the symbol of essentially a bunch of sticks bound together to symbolize
authority and power.
Authority and power, but via the strength of us in unity. That's what it was for. You know, like the old meme of like, if you can snap a twig, but if you bind a bunch of them together, it is strong. That's the socialist bit of National Socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a call for unity in that way around an identity, right? Where have we heard that before? The lamer example of fascism that wasn't even that effective was in Spain. And I don't know hardly anything about that one because Spain didn't play a big role during that conflict.
Right.
Not a meaningful one anyway. Except for the art that came out of it, like the bombing of Guernica.
Yep.
Anyway, that's not the point. So let's look at those. Let's take the two primary examples, like the actual OG fascists in Italy versus the one, the beta version that got way more popular.
Right.
So,
like happens with most things, but go on.
True. Which is why we should just cancel this podcast and make a new one.
So that the second one will do better.
There you go. That's how you climb the ladder. Okay, so let's take that second definition. Let's go through the list of characteristics. What's the first one?
Marked by centralization of authority under a dictator.
They both did do that.
Yep.
And they both did that via elections, too. Because the pathway at which you arrive at a dictator is irrelevant in this case.
Right, yeah. A dictator doesn't have to take over by force. No.
Right. Although that is something to note of both of them, is that they did assume power democratically, arguably with the use of force. You know, they both had the black shirts and brown shirts, which were like these paramilitary organizations that did operate surrounding the political ideology in, quote, protests, which pushed the party's agenda. Where have we heard this before? So, accurate. Next, what's the next characteristic?
A capitalist economy.
This one's negotiable, I think.
Yeah.
It depends on your definition of capitalism, which when you and I both spoke about agorism, we both agreed with Konkin's essentially issues with capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Like using the actual definition of capitalism as given out by Adam Smith, which is the system by which you have a class of people known as the capitalist, which operates within a system. At the time he wrote Wealth of Nations, it was a kingdom. This is essentially an authorized special group of people who have an interest, who should actually be in charge of guiding the economy. You know what I mean? In that way. A very, very more liberal take on what capitalism is. But if you were to say non-free market capitalism in the way that you have a group of people who fund private interests, that is separate from the government, you can maybe get by with that. Although I would say in both cases, the business interests all happen to be party members, because there were powerful businesses that were toppled due to government intervention in both of those cases, in Nazi Germany and in fascist Italy, where the state essentially gave advantages to party members to outrun their competitors. You know what I mean? Which is not free market at all. But arguably, because they are not, whether or not they are agents of the state is questionable.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what you mean by being an agent of the state. Like, if I do something that the state wants, does that make me an agent of the state or not? You know, it's, I think, it's kind of being wishy-washy on this, but I definitely think at minimum, an oligarchic non-government held economy or non-direct control economy. It's still kind of a command economy in that way, though. It's just not in the hands of, like, the same. It bifurcates the responsibilities of the government. Like, you don't have the government who's, it's not like in socialism or in communism where you have the central planner being the government of elected officials or mm-hmm. dictators. It's the people who already were good at the business coming in and saying, I'm a party member, just let me run the business. In this case, I want to make missiles for you, so I'm going to be the one making the missiles. And if there's several of us that are all in the party, then we can compete. But there's it's a sub-market. Essentially, it's like picking and creating a sub-market and forcing all other markets to be the black market and chasing them out. So mm-hmm. it creates essentially a pay-to-play marketplace, which is not a free market.
Right.
So I'm not going to actually, like, stand and die on the hill of it's not actually capitalist, because I don't...
Because it doesn't actually matter. It
doesn't actually matter.
It doesn't matter what you call it, yeah.
Right. It's non-free market, which is good enough for me.
Yeah.
Which I've let go of trying to pretend like capitalism is only free market capitalism, because they are not the same thing. Like, corporatism, I think, would be a better phrase for it.
Yeah.
Because it's literally what it is, but the corporation being the party, not just the members.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, they both had that.
Yep.
So next. And then,
yeah, so... The part that I omit, a capitalist economy subject to stringent governmental controls. But we kind of went over that.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Okay. Violent suppression of the opposition.
Okay. They both did do that. Like I said, mentioned before, the brown shirts and the black shirts, mm-hmm. these protest groups that did operate in violence. Whether or not, and to be fair, they did not start out just killing people, but violence is not murder.
Right.
Murder is violence. Usually, if not in all cases,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's a subset. So it starts out with, like, bombing businesses, you know, shooting at people, lighting fires, forcing people out of areas, in some places into other areas. Mm-hmm. Both places did this. So
right.
Fair enough.
And lastly, typically a policy of belligerent nationalism and racism.
So belligerent nationalism. And by this, they mean, like, you gear up and go to war to expand your nation. Like, that's what I would say they mean by belligerent mm-hmm. nationalism. Like, and we see this in both. They both wanted to take new territory and forcibly convert it to be like themselves. Right? And, okay.
Yep. And racism.
Okay. I don't think it's limited to just racism necessarily. Like, yeah. I am not as familiar with how this went down in Italy. I do not know if there was this appeal to the Roman identity, like their historical Italian Roman heritage. It much more so the case with the beta version.
Right.
But even then, it was selectively targeting certain groups. A debate that I had with somebody about proto-fascism, which was like, how do you get to here, right? One of the components that they listed was something they would consider as scapegoating based on race. So, like, mm-hmm. You pick a group and say it's this group's fault, and that group has to be a race of people. So,
right.
There's everyone's favorite group to pick on, the Jews.
Yep.
And I would say they both probably picked on the Jews. I don't know for sure in Italy's case, but I know for sure in Nazi Germany's case.
Right, everyone knows that, yeah.
Right. But the Germans also kind of felt this way about the Poles, but not to the same extreme. Like, they had the identity of the Slav. But at what point is it everybody but us? Like, because you can be, and I don't know that it matters, most people would say that race is kind of irrelevant. Like, we know that it exists, but most people, all things given, about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Evens out, right? Then you have the kind of racist that's like, okay, everyone else is the same, except for you, you're worse. Mm-hmm. But then there's the other kind that's like, everyone's the same except us, we're better.
Right.
And then there's the combination, which is we're the best, then you have everybody else, and then you're the worst.
Right. Which or some other hierarchy. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's
kind of... You can make it as convoluted as you want, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the belief in superiority and inferiority of races.
Yes. Unequal treatment based on race. Yeah. I think it's just the fairest way to say it.
Well, I think you can be a racist in, like, I think you can be a racist in principle without ever acting on it and actually treating people differently.
Sure, but I think to be a fascist government, you have to implement policies which do these things.
Yeah, okay.
Or, in the case of, like, maybe the proto-fascist, which we're not really there, it would be advocating for these policies.
Yeah.
Okay. Both did this. All right, cool. So we now know what a fascist is. Why do a fascism? Because people tried it.
Yep.
Not just one country either. And arguably, not just in the past. There are people who still think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And there are even political parties built around this. They're not very popular. But you could argue that their popularity is because of the lack of popularity, I should say, is because, well, we just had a war.
Because of how badly the previous ones messed up. Yeah.
Right. However, just like how the attitude towards other things that just messed up, i.e., communism, the attitude towards communism has changed. What's to suggest that the attitude towards fascism wouldn't either?
Right.
Right. So we do still need to contend with the idea. You can't just write it off and say, don't do it because it's bad. People said that about communism, but people are now still kind of trying to go back there. And just saying to them that it's bad is not sufficient. It's bad.
Look at all the people who died. Yeah.
Sure. And that is a bad thing. But, you know, but why did those people die? Because you can say a lot of people died. It's like, yeah, but a lot of people die all the time. People have died throughout all of history. It doesn't mean it was because of this. You have to link the two things.
Yeah.
Right. So, why do a fascism? I'm not saying we LARP as fascists to try to convince people to do this, but like, what are the often given reasons? Or like, what were the reasons given at the time, I should say?
Well, we brought up the main thing, unity.
Mm-hmm.
Unity is a virtue in the West. I think unity is kind of a virtue everywhere, actually. Maybe not like literally everywhere, but like the West and the East both value unity.
They value
in some sort of way.
I think they value cooperation.
Yeah.
But there's this attitude that is different. Like, for example, in the West, you cannot have the limiter to cooperation in a lot of cases to unity. It depends on what you mean by unity.
True.
In the case of a group identity, which is what both of these groups appealed to. They appealed to this idea, like, it's easier to look at it from Nazi Germany. The idea of the Aryan race, right? Mm-hmm. That was a concept they came up with. We are superior because we match this identity. And, you know, there's the memes and stereotypes, but those were things that were propagated. You know, the blonde hair, the blue-eyed, the strong, the whatever, the non-this, the non-that. Let's create a group and say we are special because of these things. It's identity is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Similar thing in Italy. So you can't be beholden to this identity and still have a strong sense of individualism. So I think that's where the, you know, another thing is in the fascists, there's not like there's different shape, size, and colored sticks. They're all the same.
Right.
It's the idea of...
except that they aren't, but...
They aren't, but in the symbolism they are.
Yes, in the symbol they are, yeah.
And they bind around the one thing that's different. You know, the weapon, you know. So, I would argue that that's really a core component as well around the unity. And that's why some people do it, is they want to belong to a group. And that is, I think, just downstream from the normal human behavior of wanting to be social, or our social tendencies. We want to belong to the group. And when... But that means that there is like a bar that can be set by the group to what it is takes to gain entry and not be considered an outcast. And when you start to set that bar higher and higher, there's a weird place where it's like, you set it, if you set it too high, is it really a group anymore? or if you set it too low, it's not distinct, right? And depending on where you set this bar kind of says a lot about your ideas about people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or how you determine, like, what is the bar measuring, you know?
Right.
But yeah, both of these things essentially said, we are this group. Interestingly, and again, I'm not as certain about Italy, but I'm pretty sure Italy too, but I know for a fact, Nazi Germany, or Germany at the time, they had just gone through a war, and mm-hmm. they were suffering great economic downturn. Like, there was a lot of strife in the country. People were desperate.
Looking at you, Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah, literally. Like, I'm not saying you need to read this, but Mein Kampf, the book, the mm-hmm. evil, nasty, horrible book that Hitler wrote, literally translates to my struggle.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not about, it is a spoiler, it is about fascism, but he goes through and says why. And they are bonded together by the fact that they see themselves as being victimized. They're struggling through the hardships that have been put on them by an oppressor, which was, spoiler alert, everyone else in Europe,
mm-hmm.
particularly the French and certain select groups of people.
Right.
Right. It's this idea that I am a victim of my circumstance. And he even goes on in some parts of the book to say,
well, he was kind of right.
He was
like, that's the thing. Like, Germany did kind of get screwed at the, like, speaking of scapegoating, all of Europe pointed the finger at Germany for World War One,
100%,
for really kind of no good reason. Yeah. So yeah, there was something to be said about that Germany was getting screwed for no good reason, and they were all struggling this way. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think there's arguments to be had about the goodness of the reason, but it's like putting someone in prison for the crime of being in debt.
Right.
You know, putting them in a place where they literally cannot have a good paying job to pay back that debt. That was very similar to the situation that the Weimar Republic was put in. You know, and he even goes on to mention, because Hitler was a soldier in World War One, right? And he talks about how I just served my country. I did no differently than what any British man did, than what any Frenchman did that was in the military. We served our countries. We did the exact same thing,
mm-hmm.
coin over coin. But why am I being punished? I did what they did. I was not in command.
Well, you lost, though.
But so. You lost, exactly. And so, if you're forced into that paradigm of, oh, well, I have to win then, and I have nothing
to
lose.
Well, come on then. Who's with me? Let's win. Yeah.
Let's win. Yeah. We have nothing to lose. Like, fascism, I think, is a lot of ways born out of a sense of desperation. Whether it's true or not, the feeling of desperation, when you feel as though you have nothing to lose, it's real easy to sign on for something horrible, because it's like, the world has pretty much just demonstrated to me over my entire life that I can do everything right and still come out the loser. So, you know, screw that. I'm going to win now,
mm-hmm.
even if I have to do deplorable things along the way, because that's how it seemed to me. These people did deplorable things to me in a very personal way.
Yep.
So, and that's, but that's the story of being a victim. That's the victimization narrative. And it's a powerful narrative because it appeals to this human sense of the idea of justice. We and fairness. We have an innate almost sense of fairness. And it is one of the things that can make us the most angry and motivated.
Yes.
Like, if you feel as though you've been, why do we get so mad when people cheat in a game? It's just a game.
Right. Yeah, a game with no consequences. You're not playing for money or anything like mm-hmm. that.
Why is unsportsmanship such a big deal to us in mm-hmm. that way? Because it's not fair. But why isn't it fair? Why does it matter? It just does. It's the principle of the thing.
Right. Yeah, people get shot over things like that literally mm-hmm. don't matter, but because you cheated.
Yep. And you can't help that. Most people, when they feel cheated, get very angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pick the things that people are mad about in political circles. When it comes to wages, why are people really mad? Is it really because their quality of life is that bad? No. It's because someone else makes more than me. And that's not fair.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's the same sense of fairness. And I am getting the short end of the stick. So how about all of us short end of the stick people bind those sticks together?
Bind the sticks together. Interesting. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think that, you know, that's a tale there. So why would you do a fashion? So if you're in a, if you feel desperate, and that's the other thing, you don't actually have to be desperate. You just have to feel desperate.
Right. And well, feelings are all that matters. Yeah.
That's true. And I think anybody who would tell you anyone that would tell you that politics is not about feelings is just lying to you.
Yeah.
It is. Why do we run the campaign ads than we do? Why do we focus so much on slogans as opposed to policy?
It's all feelings.
It's all feelings.
Nobody cares about facts and politics.
Mm-hmm. Least of all politicians.
Yes, least of all politicians.
Why do they lie all the time? And it's not just one party. Everyone lies.
All of them lie, yeah.
Right, but you know what? They're really good at evoking feelings. Why do they focus so much on being passionate speakers?
And practicing all their hand gestures and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
they're salesmen.
Literally. I'm here to sell you good feelings and give you your money back sometimes.
Please vote.
Please vote. Please clap.
Please clap.
So... That's one reason, I suppose, but it doesn't explain all the other things. You know, why is it that in some cases when people feel as though they've been mistreated or they feel unfair, I can understand why you would look for the scapegoat, right? You look for someone to blame.
Mm-hmm.
That's obvious. All groups do that. Communists blame the wealthy. Socialists also blame the wealthy and the stupid. You know?
Sure.
Fascists blame a racial group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is that really all that's different? You know, because like, let's take some of these other things and actually just hold them up next to what has defined communism throughout human history.
Mm-hmm.
Authoritarian?
Check. Yes.
Far right? No, not necessarily.
No.
Far left, though.
Right.
So far something.
Yes.
So that's a difference. What's the other things?
Let's see. A dictator?
Yep. Check.
Well, capitalist economy is out.
True, but...
By any definition of capitalism.
True. But is it, though?
Well.
Looking at you, China?
China does closely resemble the definition of capitalism, the kind of characterization of capitalism that was given earlier.
Well, exactly. The same one you would see in a fascist system, in right. which it's all government property... TM, but it's operated by private businesses in special economic zones that were created and carved up by the government.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, well, when they finally realize that communism isn't actually going to work and they're going to be poor forever,
mm-hmm.
they tried something that was kind of not communist, but still just as authoritarian. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, and also subject to stringent governmental controls, the economy. So
literally communism and socialism. Go on.
Okay. Violent suppression of the opposition.
Huh.
Guess who killed more people than the Nazis?
Mao. Well, Stalin. Also, yeah. Well, and look and see. Okay. Who's the opposition? Well, let's see. Kulaks. Also the Jews, by the way.
Yes. And also the Jews. I don't know if they killed more Jews specifically than the Nazis, but they did kill them.
Per capita, maybe. in the case of China, I mean, Uyghur Muslims,
yep.
Hong Kong.
What about Hong Kong?
The violent suppression of the protests in Hong Kong?
Sure. True.
The attempted violent suppression of Taiwan? Because...
You mean China? Anyway, go on.
You get my point, though. Like, spoiler alert, they did try, actually, to conquer the island. They failed. But they did try, you know.
Let's see. A policy of belligerent nationalism.
Who is staking claims around the world? Maybe this is the other difference. They don't just want to be China. They want the world to be China.
Right.
But as, you know, different. I would say this one's a bit different because they're not just openly waging an all-out war. But I don't think it's because... I think that component is just stupid. You're going to war because of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hear me out, that was the only reason anyone ever went to war.
Yes.
Or to get a populace to go to war. But the leadership understands that feelings are not enough to sustain and much less win a war. You have to... You have to be in a position to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think literally that's the only reason that other places did not do this. You know, the same way anyway. Although not for lack of trying. i.e. looking at you, you know, the Soviet government.
In, right.
You know.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
So it's a bit different. I would say there's a slight different, maybe flavor difference in the case. You would go to war if it benefited them and they could get away with it.
Right. And racism.
I mean, racism exists in both of these places.
It does, but I don't know that it characterizes it.
Right. So what does that leave us as the Delta?
Racism.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Racism and I think
and a little bit about the economy.
And a little bit about the, yeah, the it's both government, both have a government control, but the implementation details are a little different.
Yeah.
So, and the why do we even bother making this comparison, right? Well, let's look at their reasons. Why do a communism?
Things is unfair.
Things is unfair, ain't it? Maybe we should band together as a class of people.
Squinty eyes.
Mm-hmm. You could argue that communism is just classist fascism.
Right. It's classism instead of nationalism.
Yep. Oh, and racism.
And racism.
Sort of.
Yeah. Kinda.
Kinda. If you have classism, we'll take that instead of the race thing.
Right.
But if you don't have the class thing, then it's like, well.
Maybe I just don't like you.
If you just said it was about the upper class, then you would have been fine. You would have just been communist and we'd been over it. You know. Yeah. Okay. But is there any other reason? I mean, I think that really is just the main reason. Yeah. Also, but I guess let's talk a little bit more of the consequences, right? Like, what does it mean to have a population that has nothing to lose, right? Like, what do you need to fight a war as a country? Like, okay, to successfully just fight the war and not be steamrolled. What do you need?
Right, you need resources of some kind.
You need resources, yeah. What else? I'm taking resources to mean like material resources.
Yes.
What else?
Are you also looking for like the attitude? Or
you need an army.
True, yeah.
You can't wait. Well, you can try to wage a one-man war.
Right.
We just call you a terrorist.
Right. Yes. Yes.
It's terrorism if you're too small for it to be, you know, a war.
That's pretty much the distinction there, yeah.
But what do you need to have an army? Like an actual good army. Like there's, I think, a difference. You can hire an army, technically.
Technically.
But if you're going to fight like a big old war as a country, you need soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Soldiers that want to be there.
Yeah.
That have nothing to lose.
Right.
And one thing that's always kind of interested me, like we have this in America. This is already a thing here, by the way. We love our military. Like we have several holidays dedicated to just military personnel.
Mm-hmm.
Memorial Day, which is for the dead, the people who sucked at war and died. I'm sorry, didn't mean to be so offended, but the people who've died. And then Veterans Day for the ones who lived.
Yeah.
Two. They get special discounts. They're one of the special three. Veterans, seniors, and children. The three most specialist groups of people. They get discounts all over the place. They have their own publicly operated health system.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have...
In the United States, they do anyway.
That's what I mean. I said in the U.S.
Okay.
And like they are treated as a special group.
Yeah.
For what they do. And I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, did you ever have Army Men toys?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty common. G.I. Joe is a thing. You know? I don't know about you, but like some of the stuff that the military gets to use is pretty cool.
Sure.
Guns are cool.
Guns are cool.
Tanks are cool.
Things that go boom are cool.
Yeah. And when I talk to people who have served in the military, a lot of them say, like you and I have, you know, acquaintances that were in the military,
mm-hmm.
and friends, a lot of them still talk to a lot of the people they served with.
Sure.
Like there is this identity that comes with being a veteran and a group that is there to support you.
And your comrades.
And your comrades. Yes. And it kind of appeals to this same sense of, like, brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of people that when they joined the military, when they got out, all of their friends were their military buddies. You know, their veteran friends.
Mm-hmm.
We have special groups like VFW Post, Veterans of Foreign War. And what's the other one? The American Legion,
mm-hmm.
where soldiers get together and they just have special places to congregate together. And that's the point of those places, you know, because they share similar experience. I'm not saying that any of that's wrong necessarily, but a lot of this does go into kind of placing that role in society in higher esteem. In the same way that we typically look at people like teachers and doctors, in the same way, they're considered very reputable, very necessary. Just like how lawyers are very necessary, but no one likes them, you know, because they're not held in high esteem. Just like how teachers are not necessary, but we hold them in high esteem for some reason. I'm sorry. I just like taking shots at teachers because they get butt mad over it. I don't know. Like,
depends on what kind of teacher. We're going.
True. Poor teachers. So most. I don't know. It's just the same things. Like, it was slightly different. I think the motivations, like, I don't have any in front of me, but I bet you if you were to go pull like recruitment propaganda from World War II, you'd see a lot of similarities between like all sides kind of have the same playbook when it comes to why'd you sign up and join.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the cultural ethos behind it is a bit different, right? Just a little bit. Like, but you kind of can't be fighting a war and be happy to have have soldiers that are happy to sign up and join without being a little nationalistic and taking some national pride.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
Right, no one wants to fight for something they're not proud of.
Exactly. Or believe in.
Right.
Or pledge allegiance to something that they don't believe in.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's a slippery slope for me as far as like nationalism is kind of transient. Like, for example, but we don't call it that here, right? It's patriotism.
Right. That's our fancy word for it.
Yeah. Like, what is the real difference between being a patriot and a nationalist?
I don't think there is one.
The best just differentiator I've heard was that a patriot loves their country. But a nationalist loves their country because it's better than other countries.
Mm.
Like, that's how I've had the difference described to me before. But then when I say, well, I've never heard a nationalist say that our country is the best. They just talk about how much they love it. And they're like, yeah, but they implied that. I'm like, well, then how do you tell the difference, right? Because the argument also is often made that, well, fascists won't just come out and say they're fascist. I'm like, well, why is that? Why not? They did before.
They did before, yeah.
Why are they not doing it now? Oh, because you're suppressing them. Like, I'm just saying, like, maybe this is one of the reasons why
because they're embarrassed by how the last ones did it.
Sure. Just like how communists were kind of ashamed to be communists for a while.
Right.
Understandable. You should still be ashamed, but, you know.
But that's not what this episode is about.
That's not what this episode is about, because we rag on communism all the time.
It's true. So they are my favorite punching bag. Anyway, go on.
Yes, they are. So I guess that's why. So why not do a fascism?
Racism bad.
Racism bad. That is absolutely true. Yeah. Wholeheartedly agree.
Nationalism bad.
Nationalism, also bad. I do tend to agree. Although, okay, I'm going to devil's advocate this one for a little bit. If your choices were nationalism or globalism, and I do not have a prepared definition for globalism.
We've had this conversation before in private, but yeah. Yes, among those two, nationalism is preferred. But the reason that I would give for that is because that is one step closer to individualism, which is what I actually want.
Yeah, the group of those in power is smaller. The power held by the in charge is smaller when they're cut up by nations than if
they were ruling the entire world. Yeah,
right. So, but yeah, you also, I don't think you should necessarily be taking sides based on, well, I'm not going to get my way, so let me compromise.
Right, because we know what compromise means.
Everybody loses.
Yeah,
except in this case, it's actually just kind of just choosing to lose differently. Well, I don't want to be a communist. I don't want to live in a communist regime, so I guess I'll lose in a fascist one.
Right.
Still bad.
Like, still bad.
Okay. Huh. I think war is generally bad.
War is generally bad, yeah.
And that is...
That's another reason that I don't like nationalism. War often precipitates from that.
Yeah. Fascists also tend to, while they do drum up a lot of support, they also like to draft people.
Mm-hmm.
And make them fight. Or just contribute to being a part of the war machine in general. You know? So, that's bad.
Right, even if you're not going to be a soldier, you're going to be supporting the war.
Yeah. We need you to work for less money to make tanks because war. And you don't want to be committing treason, do you? That's probably not good. And also, you can't really fight a war with having a without having a strong central government. I mean, look at even America during World War II. Oh, FDR overreached quite a bit. Like, you could say it was the nationalistic, the patriotic response of the American people. Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm sure that's why all of these companies chose to make less money temporarily. It had nothing to do with the fact that looking at the position was like, oh, we're, you know. We need to ration things. You just can't have this now. Well, why not? I can afford it. Because the war. And the war more important than you. Because I decided. Yeah, I don't like that. Don't mess with my markets. And war is always given as a good excuse to mess with. I mean, it's even being given as an excuse now. Not that we're trying to be too politically relevant, but like, even when it's not our war, there are plenty of examples of like, oh, well, there's a war elsewhere, so we have to make cuts for this. Why? Like,
yeah, why should we change it all? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because we need to punish those other people, so you now can't buy this because they did a bad thing. What?
That makes sense.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, you can no longer purchase like ammo made in countries that we consider to be bad or belligerent because we decided. Because that's going to hurt them.
Right.
But I don't want no part of this. You don't speak for me. Like,
right.
Anyway. So that's bad. Political extremism in general is bad as well in some ways. Like, as a person that believes in the counter-economic approach to dismantling mm-hmm. authoritarianism, I inherently don't want to be a revolutionary in that way.
Right.
I do not feel like you need to fight a revolution, which both of these groups do. It's just different.
Yeah.
Because they both have paramilitaries that are operating outside the government because you're not quite in power yet. Like, there's that quasi-state when you're not... Like, before Germany was ran by the Nazis were just a party.
Mm-hmm.
But they used paramilitary tactics to get into power. Right? Same thing. Black shirts, brown shirts. Arguably, things going on in different countries as well and have for a long time. Yeah, I don't like that. Stop it. You know, stop being violent to get your way.
Mm-hmm.
I generally detest that.
Might does not make right.
No. But it can make
if you matters. Had a good idea, you wouldn't need to use violence. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's why not do a fascism or any of the things that are downstream from any of the things that are components of fascism that may or may not be components of these other systems that we've talked about.
Yeah.
So I think we also, maybe lastly here, can't talk about fascism without talking about the elephant in the room, about how everything's fascist too.
Yes.
Why is that? Do you think?
Why do we call everything fascist?
Well, we.
Okay, well, yeah, not me and you.
Why do things get labeled as fascist all the time?
It's an easy word to call something bad without just calling it bad in a political context.
Okay.
Intellectual laziness. That's what I'm blaming for it.
Fair enough. And it's not the only word to get used this way.
Sure.
What are some other examples?
Racist.
Okay. All the phobics now.
Sure, yeah.
If you're anything phobic, which no longer holds the original definition of being afraid of, just opposed to.
Right.
Which, to be fair, they at least borrowed that from something that actually does mean that. Xenophobia, is where a lot of that comes from, because that has existed a lot longer. It's not fear of some other cultures. It's the alienation of other cultures to keep them different and to keep them separated and away. So,
I mean, the word still comes from fear, though. Like, xenophobia is just fear of the other.
Sure, but... okay, but the difference is, like, I might be arachnophobic, right?
Right.
I am afraid of spiders. Then from that... but that's what I'm trying to say. Like, if I told you that I'm arachnophobic, you're like, oh, you must hate eight-legged arachnids. Eight-legged insect-like creatures. It's like, that is correct. Because you're afraid of them, right? I do not think that most people who are xenophobic are necessarily afraid of the xenos in this case, or the others, the other cultures. I don't think that they're necessarily afraid. I just think they find them detestable or disgusting or whatever other word you want to use. But I don't think it's fear in the same way that we would use arachnophobia. Just like in the same way that when people say something else, like you're homophobic, they don't necessarily mean that you're afraid of them, but like, they really are emphasizing on the downstream consequence as if though you were afraid of them, as in you find them detestable. Although arguably you could say that people that are arachnophobic, they hate them because they find them creepy or disgusting, like arachnids in this case.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same, but I think the emphasis is not on the fear. Just like when you would say you're arachnophobic in the sense that you're trying not to be, then you are going to treat the fear. But when you are saying that someone is homophobic, you don't treat it as though, oh, why are you afraid? We need to help you not be afraid. It's just a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that we treated xenophobia. That's why I would think that's kind of the origin.
Okay.
So, those are all of those things. Racism, all the phobics, fascism, like fascist, like all of these things that are identified, or they're all intellectual laziness, but like, why choose one over the other? Which, hear me out, why do people bother choosing one over the other? You know, like, I don't know about you, but I hear when something is referred to by at least one of those words, it's usually just said in a string of those words. They're just all used.
Well, people love their hyperbole.
True.
This is the worst thing ever that I've ever seen.
Yeah. People also like using, I don't know, hyperbole in the form of like, I'm going to list a bunch of things about it. This is bad, terrible, horrible, the worst, most atrocious, awful thing ever.
It's cool. You have said nothing except that it's bad.
Yeah. But I used all these words.
But I used all these other words that also mean bad. Yeah.
Right. But they're various degrees of bad. But I'm dialing
but
up
But it's the all degree the of degrees of bad.
Yeah. But it's emphasis for hyperbole's sake. Okay, what is wrong with this, though? Because I don't know about you, I tend to not like it when people label things this way.
It dilutes the meanings of those other words.
I agree.
Those are useful words in their proper context.
Mm-hmm. And maybe because...
it would be useful to call something that's actually fascist, fascist. But now I can't, because everyone is fascist.
Right. But why do you need to differentiate it? Why is it not enough for it to just be a bad... and just don't do it, don't like it, don't associate with it?
Depends on what the particular case is, and why I don't like it, but I don't know.
Well, let's take the big three, the phobics, pick one.
Sure.
Racist, fascist. Is there a case where you would want to associate with any of those, right?
Where I would want to associate with any of those? No, probably not.
Yeah, so why does it matter which one I use if I'm trying to get the same effect? Like, what is so wrong about using the wrong one if the same intended consequence is what I'm trying to mean? Besides just being lazy and less precise, which I think is bad in and of itself, but that's more of a petty crime to me to just be hyperbolic and maybe a bit inaccurate.
I mean, people slash groups that are any one of those things are... those things for different reasons. So if I am actually trying to address a problem, then it matters what the thing actually is that I'm arguing against.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's the reason why you wouldn't want to do that.
So that's why I want the precision of language.
Yeah. You treat them differently.
Right.
Like, they're all bad, yes. But how you address this badness is different than the other kinds of badness. And it's not because some of them are more detestable than others. They're all detestable, right? But how I am going to deal with it and the reasons why. Like, for example, you might point out to me, hey, this person over here, they are a racist. I'm like, oh, okay, good to know. But then if that person, the more I learn about that person, if that person functions in society as something that is pretty race neutral, it's like, okay, they are less of a threat to me in that way. They're just a bad person. But if it's like, oh, that person's a fascist, and they're also involved in something in which that has a direct implication as to what they're doing, oftentimes usually political, which political is a huge catch-all term here. Like, what do you mean? Like, for example, if you have a racist accountant that literally just looks at spreadsheets for government accounts that have nothing to do with people, like they don't know what any of these accounts are. Like, I'm sure you could isolate some instances where you would want to make sure this person was like not exercising their prejudice.
Very neutral, yeah.
Right. But if they're a fascist in general, it's like, well, that's worse in this specific case. Mm-hmm. And also, it's kind of hard to say because fascism also has the racism as a component. Arguably also has the phobic components. Mm-hmm. Although not necessarily. In the last minutes, maybe. But anyway, I think that's why, I guess.
Sure.
I guess in the last minutes, I would like to talk about one of my favorite groups of fascists.
Okay.
And by this, I mean like the ones that I find the most hilarious. Serious, but hilarious in concept. The eco-fascist. They are some of my favorite fascists to bash. In the way that I mean in the debate, non-physical violence.
Right. To embarrass.
Embarrass, yes. So, however, they, I think, are also the most, they're the least detestable for some reason for the average person.
Mm-hmm.
Who would, or the more you hate fascism, I weirdly feel like the less likely you are to hate eco-fascism. Which is interesting to me.
Hmm.
So how would you characterize an eco-fascist or eco-fascism? Like, I'm sure you have a caricature in your mind of what this is.
I can't say that I do, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I don't spend my time in the same circles you do, so.
Fair enough. So here's my caricature of them. So imagine, like, a hippie.
Okay, that vaguely came to mind.
The stereotypical hippie. And by that I mean the super in touch, earthy, probably smells bad person that is really in touch with late 60s, early 70s iconography that they refer to as early 80s because they don't also understand how time works.
Numbers are hard.
So that loves something so much, i.e. nature, which by that they literally mean non-human nature, because we, spoiler alert, are also nature.
Right, but people love to not believe that, so.
Yeah, you know. That their love for this thing is enough to justify literal acts of terrorism, like plotting to literally blow up a dam to return the waters back to where it was before the evil humans bound it into its aqueous concrete prison. Or something else crappily poetic.
Right. Pretentious. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They also have been in college for at least 8 to 10 years and have yet to achieve a degree in anything meaningful. Yeah. They are unapplied academics. For example, there's nothing wrong with getting a degree in botany. There's nothing wrong with studying biology in general.
No, those are useful things, actually. Yeah.
Well, potentially.
Yeah, if you do something
with
them. But
you actually have to do something productive with them. However, they just are so fascinated with these things, but they do not want to interfere, which, spoiler alert, means do anything productive with any of these things.
Right.
They just want to appreciate them. Like, if there was an option for the easier course called biology, ecological appreciation, in the same way we have film appreciation or music appreciation, that totally would have been the course they took instead, because that's all they really care about.
Right. That's a lot easier than actually studying biology.
Right.
And learning the real mechanics about how this stuff works.
Yeah. You know, like science. But
yeah, you know, like actually discovering things for the good of humanity.
Right. Yeah. They're my favorite people to lampoon because they... And I think the reason a lot of people don't come down on them as hard as the other fascists in a way is because, are they really fascists?
They're not nationalistic.
Not necessarily, no. They're not racist, typically.
They're not racist, no.
Well, sort of, though. They're human racist. Like, they put us as biggest
they're
evil.
They're anti-human, yeah.
Yeah.
Are they authoritarians?
They would be.
Kinda, like, yeah.
They're authoritarian in the way that if I said, hey, we're going to suspend all democracy and have an emperor of this country or the world for 1 year, who would you pick to be that emperor? They're authoritarian in the way that just like any logical human being would say, me. But it's how they would use this. Because hear me out. There's this also kind of lampoonable idea of the benevolent dictator,
mm-hmm.
right? Where it's like, the person's a dictator, but they're all right. You know what I mean? Like, they right. actually care about the things I care about.
The king's not so bad anyway.
The king, not so bad. Sometimes they're great. Not terrible. But... but that's what they would see themselves as. The benevolent dictator to return us all to the Stone Age like, you know, we're supposed to be by their opinion.
Right.
They decided.
Right. Where we belong. Yes.
But they will also use technology to do that.
Right.
I'm going to take the human inventions of the gun and the bomb, you know, the things they would say are the worst things we've created, and use them to destroy the system so that no one else has that again and return us back to the Stone Age. You know, for the good of the earth.
Mm-hmm. Which matters so much.
Yeah.
Not to say that I'm not a big fan of the earth. It's pretty great.
Pretty awesome.
But
best spaceship ever so far.
Right. But it's good for me, though.
I wouldn't know it any other way. Yeah, it's a good place to be in. But just like how if I stuck you in a room and you're going to modify that room to suit your needs, you know.
Right, yeah, this room is pretty great, but I'm going to change it to the way that most suits me.
Yeah.
Instead of leaving the floor bare to preserve the original condition of the room as best I can.
Or to make it a little bit more accurate, have you put you in a place where, you came about in this place where you're adapted to it pretty well. You can breathe the air, which is great. You're given motor function to get around in this place, and there happens to be things you can eat all about. That's pretty awesome. You're not doomed to death like you would be if we dropped you in the middle of like take Mars, make it habitable air-wise, and drop someone on it, you still die.
Right, it's a desert.
Yeah, it's literal doom in that way. Earth is not that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. You can survive. But humans have been over-surviving for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to thrive, you know. That's the thing. So anyway.
We're too good at surviving to do that.
Yeah. We're too good at surviving to just survive. New game plus, please. yeah, but they're my favorite group to lampoon. Because I would argue that by the most common modern-day definitions of fascists, they are not that. But I think it does serve to interesting purpose. Does serve to highlight an interesting purpose by what people I think actually mean when they say fascist. They mainly mean people who would use violent, like the biggest characteristic to me of what a fascist is a person that would forsake other human beings to achieve their political goals in a ruthless manner,
mm-hmm.
using all the powers of the state.
Yeah, we're going to do this no matter what. Yeah.
Individual goals. Yeah. That's how I would say it. Which, by the way, that's literally just authoritarianism.
Yes.
However, it's slightly more egregious authoritarianism in the way that they are literally targeting humans as the evil.
Right.
Yeah. The fascist limitation, the labels of like racism, I think they're added bonuses to that, but just to hate people. Is mm-hmm. all it really takes. And I would offer eco-fascism as the example. Because they're not racist. They just hate people. They don't do this in support of... They hate people and love something more than people.
Mm-hmm.
And would forsake people for it. In the fascist case, it's a group of people over another group of people. But in the case of the eco-fascists, it's the earth over people. Right? But that's all it takes. it actually, I don't think you actually need to be racist, or we need to change the definition of eco-fascist to be eco-authoritarian, which is not as scary sounding.
Right.
To be consistent.
Eco-terrorists.
That's true, but terrorism, but you, they're only eco-terrorists because they're losing.
Right.
If they actually got into office, they would become eco-fascists.
Right.
Remember, it's all about the optics and the winning.
Yes, the winning.
Yes. This would be a great place to put a sponsor segment if we have one about winning. Hi. Are you tired of losing?
This episode of Philosophers is brought to you by winning.
Brought to you by winning. Hi. I'm philosopher. Have you felt a lack of winning in your life recently?
Yes.
Would you like to see your winning improve?
Of course.
More stamina in your winning and other jokes about that. Do you feel like you don't win as much as you did when you were young?
When you first got married.
You first got married. Okay, we're off topic. Philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.